James Meek, a writer and journalist who writes for The Guardian and who wrote numerous articles about Guantanamo Bay and Iraq, spoke at the University of Winnipeg on September 19, 2005. Mr. Meek talked about globalization and issues related to it, as well as about the future of Iraq.
I don't see myself exactly as a reporter on politics, although personally I have a very broad definition of what politics is. To me, politics is any time when an individual interacts with another individual and the one or both of the individuals are operating not as individuals but as agents of some greater authority. I suppose in terms of that definition, I have written about politics when I write for The Guardian. What I've been doing for the paper, as Alan said, in the 1990s I was a foreign correspondent for The Guardian of London in the former Soviet Union. I travelled a lot around there. There was a bit of a hiatus in the early part of this century, if I may say that, when I was doing other things for the paper. But what I've been doing lately is I've had a very very good, for me, brief, which is to write long, reasonably considered articles about different parts of the world, and also to do quite a bit of what I suppose you'd have to call post 9/11 reporting from places like Afghanistan and Iraq. And although I've never actually been to Guantanamo Bay for reasons I will explain if anyone's interested, I have reported on the prison camp and talked to people who have been imprisoned there. So I don't want to set myself up as somebody who has a great theory about world politics. All I can do is share any experiences which you might find interesting about the various assignments I've had and the various places I've been over the past few years. As I say, I've done this post 9/11 work. Just to give you an idea of the kind of things that I do, I was in Germany a couple of weeks ago writing about the country in the run-up to the elections there. I was in Iran in July, again, just around about election time. Not actually writing about the elections, but around the elections, just to try and get a sense of the mood in the country, regardless of who actually won. I visited China last year. I don't know whether I'm really in a position to make much of any kind of general remarks about the way the world is looking. I think everyone is aware that, and perhaps in a way 9/11 sort of masked this, and a lot of other events have masked it, that we are now in a time of great change in the world. Not so much because of what's happening in the Middle East, not even perhaps, although I think this is a bigger factor, not even the collapse of the Soviet Union, those two events which have dominated so much of the media discourse over the past 20 years. The great events which are lying on the horizon beyond all this are the transformation of the economies of these gigantic countries, China and India, which are changing the balance of power in the world, which, as history seems to suggest, they're all about money, ultimately. You can have an army, but somebody has to pay the army. And certainly if you go back now and read Paul Kennedy's book from the mid-1980s about the rise and fall of the great powers, and you look at the extent to which the United States, still the world's preeminent military power, is overstretched, then it starts to look quite familiar. In terms of the overstretch of the British Empire, whose back was finally financially broken by the First and Second World Wars, and other empires like the Spanish Empire. Those who really know much more about China than I do say, caution that, well, hang on, China has huge problems, there's a lot of superficiality about its boom. But still, the numbers, if you are an interested citizen of the United States do look quite scary. You can't really get away from the conclusion that the way that George Bush has been able to finance tax cuts and two wars at the same time is by borrowing money from China, money which China has got from American consumers. So it's a rather scary sort of cycle, and I'm not in a position to say, although other people who know more about it than I do say this, I'm not in a position to say that definitely will be some kind of crisis, but there's clearly a tendency there which is not sustainable in the long run. So globalization is the big issue, the way that the pie is being divided up differently, and it may be a bigger pie in the end, and it may be that everyone will benefit, but maybe not. We'll have to see, but I think that is the big background which in 50 years' time perhaps historians will not put such a high emphasis on events in the Middle East and the former Soviet Union, the collapse of the communist bloc as they do now. In a wider sense, I think there's also something quite interesting happening in Northern Hemisphere politics. I don't know how much this applies to North America, but when I travel around Europe, and this is very much true of Britain as well, I'm struck by the feeling, and I'd be very interested to hear anyone else's views on this, that the parties are aligned in the wrong way. We don't have parties which genuinely reflect the fears aspirations of people, but more the fears than the aspirations, I'm afraid to say. I feel the real divide now in Europe is between what you might call localists and what you might call internationalists. I've seen this in the British election, and it's just when you talk to people, it's not something which is usually reflected in the reporting of politics, which goes along with the traditional idea of 4 or 5 year cycle and left versus right. It was crystallized for me when I was in Sweden in 2003. If you remember, Sweden was having a referendum, do we want to join the euro or not? The referendum was lost by the pro-euro camp, despite the fact that the leading light of the pro-euro camp was assassinated or murdered in the course of the campaign. So the Swedes felt so strongly about it that not even the death of the leading campaigner for the euro could sway them in favor of accepting it. And what I saw there was this this new alignment, not formal, not even very comfortably acknowledged by those taking part in it. But for example, you would have a young, radical, pierced, tattooed, groovy guy in his 20s who would be at the anti-globalist meetings and throwing rocks at the police, sitting next to and finding common cause with a distinguished elderly silver-haired gentleman from one of the smaller right-wing parties, united in their opposition to the idea of the euro. And you would have the sort of business-friendly lawyer stroke accountant background faction within the left-wing party making common cause with the MBA types from the right-wing party. So the real divide was not between liberals and conservatives, but between those who believed that the best thing for the world was multinational organizations like the European Union and multinational corporations. There's a very, very close relationship there. And on the other side, you had people who believed in the value of the small and the local, the value of local languages and local culture, which of course is very desirable but very dangerous. And you do see some very, very strange bedfellows there. And when you look back on recent history in those terms, you start to conclude that people like Margaret Thatcher and even perhaps Ronald Reagan, they succeeded in a way, but they also failed in a way, because they succeeded in transforming their countries economically, socially. But what they didn't understand was that that was not necessarily compatible with old-fashioned ideas of patriotism. That if you are a traditional right-winger and you are in favor of business, say, then, but you're also a patriot, like Thatcher and Reagan, then where do you go when it turns out that the thing which the businessmen actually want to do is ship all their jobs out to Malaysia? That's the problem that Thatcher and Reagan never really understood, and now people like Blair and Bush are having to deal with this this apparently irreconcilable conflict, which is not necessarily reflected in a choice which is offered to the people between political parties. You do not have a localist and an internationalist duality of parties in any not a clear-cut one anyway, in any political contest in Europe or North America that I've seen recently.
You don't want to sort of venture on the future of Iraq?
Well, I should say I haven't been back to Iraq since last July. I've been four times now since I joined the invasion, and three times since. I've spent, I suppose, about 2.5 months there altogether, and I still do keep in touch with it. Perhaps because I've been there, even though I haven't been since July, I've got a better sense of the texture of the place. I would advise anyone who wants to understand what's going on in Iraq now and who doesn't want to spend too long doing it to look up some articles by a British journalist called Patrick Coburn. He's written a couple of excellent pieces for the London Review of Books recently. Hopefully you can still find them online. And his very bleak assessment of the situation could be encapsulated in him talking about the there's three basic factions apart from the Americans in Iraq, the Sunnis, the Shias, and the Kurds. And he said the insurgency will continue because none of the parties have got everything they want and none of them have given up hope of getting it. I think that says it all. That is the situation. That was the situation a year ago. It's still the situation now. And I don't really see any sign that the situation will change in the next year. It looks far more likely that the United States will try and call a victory and leave. But I don't think they imagined even a year ago that it was going to be so hard for them to fabricate anything resembling a victory. It's just every day it's the same, bad, bad, bad. But they've got to get out. It's a real trap. And I don't know how long it can be isolated. I don't know how many men they can lose. While all this is happening, the Iraqi state itself is a very notional and nominal concept, and it just continues to bleed and be stolen from. It's a nightmare, but you know that.
You have heard a talk that was given by James Meek, a writer and journalist who spoke at the University of Winnipeg on September 19, 2005. My name is Bojan Dulovic, and you are listening to CKUW's The Beat, 95.9 FM Winnipeg.